The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations of listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely on our website at kopn.org.
Welcome to Thought Crime Radio. We are the voices for the human rights of babies, and I'm Janelle, and I'm in the studio here in downtown Columbia, Missouri, with Rich, my cohort.
Welcome.
My co-host.
Cohort. We are a cohort.
We are a cohort in crime.
Yes. Greetings out there in Radio Land. This is a show about, what is this show about? This is a show about a huge blind spot in human culture and knowledge, which has been repeatedly illuminated through the diligent efforts of researchers and philosophers and conscious people throughout history, and promptly forgotten by the powers that be and suppressed in our popular culture. And that blind spot has to do with the treatment of babies, infants, and children.
And the separation of babies from their mothers, which is a core.
Yes.
It's a core need for a baby and a mother to be connected from conception through gestation. They are so connected, and in the moments of birth, they need to continue to stay connected. So we've been talking a lot for months about all the things that happen to babies and mothers in the birthing environment, which in our country is predominantly hospital-based.
And how it feeds all these social dysfunctions that really make the difference between what we have in this planet right now and what we could be, which is, we could be living in paradise.
Yeah, we could be. And we are just beyond excitement to have our guest with us today. He's a researcher that Rich and I both have been aware of for a decade or more, and that we have read and respected immensely. He's the man.
He is the man.
We've mentioned his name almost every show. His name comes up because he's the person who, back in the 60s and 70s, told us what we need to know right now. And I'll just read a little bit here about him. James W. Prescott is a PhD. He's a developmental neuropsychologist and cross-cultural psychologist, and he joined the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, National Institutes of Health, in Bethesda, Maryland, where he created the Developmental Behavioral Biology Program of the newly created NICHD, and served as its health scientist administrator from 1963 to 1980. During this period, Dr. Prescott initiated and established a number of basic brain research programs which documented that the early life experiences of mother-infant separation induced a variety of developmental brain abnormalities. Prescott concluded that the failure of bonding in the mother-infant relationship, including insufficient breastfeeding, induces developmental brain abnormalities in the infant child that results in later depression and violence of suicidal and homicidal behaviors that are of epidemic proportions in America and can account in part for the prevalence of the massive psychiatric medication of the children and youth of America. And that is what this show is about. It's about pointing out the mind control that is established at the moments of and after birth and during the infancy.
This is about the shock doctrine as applied to obstetrics.
And the continued separation of mothers and babies, so that we have psychological people, we have medical people, we have religious people, all these systems telling us that it's okay to separate a baby, that a baby needs to be in daycare. We're taking children away from their mothers very early to put them in daycare because we say that they're not sufficient
with
their mother. And it's insane, and it's creating insanity.
The economics don't make any sense of putting mothers in the labor force when they have babies in daycare. It just doesn't make any sense. These babies go on to tax our justice system, our social support networks to a far greater degree than any economic output that could possibly result from these mothers being involved in the workforce.
It's insanity.
It is insane.
And Dr. Prescott has a film called Rockabye Baby that was presented by Time Life, and it's got to be in the 70s. We knew this information.
Yes.
We know this information, and here today, in the year 2010, women are fighting for their rights to have the birth that they want, where they want it, and most women know in their body and in their heart and soul that they want to stay connected to their baby. That's what the natural birth movement is really about. Women don't want to go to the hospital because they don't want to be violated. They don't want their baby taken from them and violated. And that is what is the biggest disruption of breastfeeding. Dr. Prescott's work showed us that breastfeeding is like key. So if we disrupt the breastfeeding, we disrupt that mother and that baby for life. And guess what? They become servants to this chain, this food chain of professional organizations and systems and therapies that we have and behavioral programs. And you want to talk about problems in the schools, children failing in the schools, childhood delinquency, childhood obesity? It's all about the mother-baby connection in the first.
Attention deficit disorder, self-mutilation, depression, violence. These are all things that are crucially determined in the pivotal time between, even before birth, but certainly at birth and up to age 2.5 or 3. And this is a huge blind spot in this society. And whoever suppressed this research is a monster.
Yeah, that's where we were going to go next before we bring Dr. Prescott
yes.
on, is that I wanted you to briefly talk about the suppression of it. Because, you know, you may not know out there, Dr. Prescott did this groundbreaking, awesome research that showed us what we need to do, and it's really, really simple. Treat the mother and baby kindly. Keep the baby in the mother's arms.
It's entirely intuitive.
We will create a peaceful planet, peaceful families. And what happened to his research, Rich?
Yes, this was taxpayer-funded research at the National Institutes of Health back in the 60s and 70s, and it should have become a standard part of every, you know, textbook dealing with anything dealing with children and raising children. And it was completely suppressed. Absolutely unbelievable.
And hopefully he'll be able to tell us a little bit about that. But I just want to make sure that people know that we knew in the 60s and 70s, we knew. And I talked a few weeks ago with Dr. Fishbein about the research that showed us. I read research that showed us this. It's time for it to stop. It's time for us to listen to the research of people like Dr. Prescott and do what is right for every single baby coming into this planet, because that is how we're going to create peace in our homes, in our community, and in our country, and on the planet.
It's time for the people of this country to rise up and demand accountability from government. That's what it's time for.
Yeah.
And this is certainly a crying issue.
And this is, no kidding. I think in that research, he cited something that there's a correlation. Now, this is going to surprise people. There's a correlation between babies who were left to cry and alcoholism. Think about it. Don't deny it. Don't say that's not possible. Just think about it and read the research. So we need to bring him on.
Bring him on.
Let's bring him on because we need to get at this. We are so excited to have him on today. I think I lost him.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. That would be a bummer. So you keep talking and I'll call him back.
Well, if you look at our website, thoughtcrimeradio.blogspot.com, on the right side, under our links, you will find a link to one of his papers. It was published back in 2001 that summarizes a lot of this research. Prescott on the developmental neurobiology of misery and bliss. And so the next time you you ponder the failings of this society and how many people we throw into jail and how we can't seem to get our act together to take care of our own people, you need to bring this up with people, because I don't know how it's happened, but this crucial information has been lost to our society.
Just tell them what you're always telling me.
Well, I'm just outraged, okay? I mean, I guess people have listened to that show, this show, for months. We've been dealing with these issues since August, and the behavior of American medicine and the American government with respect to the welfare of children has been outrageous, absolutely outrageous. One can only conclude that there are malevolent forces in very powerful positions in this country who are bound and determined to harm our children.
Keep talking, Rich.
Well, in this paper that's linked from our website, it says, in America, 6.8%, only 6.8% of mothers are breastfeeding at 12 months.
Dr. Prescott, are you there?
Yes.
Yay!
Hallelujah.
Hey, welcome to the show. Of all the days to have this kind of problem, we're so excited. I think that's part of the problem.
Dr. Prescott?
Yes.
Yes.
Can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So we've been ranting and raving. I guess you've heard some of it.
Well, it's very, very difficult.
Oh.
It's sort of background.
Oh. So sorry. Can you hear us better now?
Well, still background. But that's all right. I can hear you.
Okay.
Well, I can hear you better than Jamel.
Oh, Jamel. Okay.
Well, I had the mic off because I was calling you.
Oh.
How's that?
Yes.
There's too many push buttons on this thing.
Wow, this is the day we wanted to be so impressive when we had our greatest guest on.
Yes, you are definitely the pivotal person here. So maybe... if you could just get into some of the things that you discovered in your primate research on the crucial and human research on the crucial role of early infant mother bonding and breastfeeding and what can be learned about how we need to support our young mothers to produce optimal human beings.
Yes, I first got involved in this when Harry Harlow reported first on his research. It was a 1956 paper in The Nature of Love, an American Psychologist, in which he separated infants from their mothers, reared them in single cages, spinal cells. And this resulted in severe emotional, social, behavioral pathologies, sexual pathologies, and as infants and also as adolescents, which violence began to emerge, pathological self-stimulation, self-mutilation, and violence towards other infant monkeys and also to adult monkeys, which normally river monkeys don't do. The major breakthrough that I felt the most important study in over 50 years of research in this area, I think, was conducted by Professor William Bill Mason and Chris Berkson, in which they reared the separated infant monkeys, a group on moving mother surrogate, and another group that was on a stationary surrogate, it was both to the floor. And surprisingly,
and when you talk about surrogate mothers, you're talking about these wire mesh cages, wire mesh.
Yeah,
constructions.
And it was in the Mason Gerson studies that had a fur rug wrapped around a Clorox bottle and a bolter and the pipe band so the infant might could sit on it or ride on it when it was being moved. And so these are the two experimental conditions, and the monkeys that were reared on the moving mother surrogate developed virtually none of the severe pathological behaviors that have been so commonly observed in infants separated from their mothers. And this really, I think, was the most important breakthrough in studies over the past 50 years, because it pointed to a different sensory system that was involved in attachment to affectional bonding behaviors, and that was the vestibular cerebellar system. And that led me to explore the role of the cerebellum in the modulation and regulation of emotional behaviors of the infant.
Now, for the listener, the vestibular sensory apparatus is the part of the brain that's associated with movement and balance, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
And the primary projection fields of the vestibular sensory system is the brain stem and the cerebellum. Very little projections are to the cerebral neocortex. And so the probably isn't time to go to too much detail on the role of the cerebellum, but this led to some other studies of cerebral decortication, because one of the operating principles here is Cannon's law of denervation supersensitivity. That is, when a neural structure is deprived of its sensory aberrant input, it becomes supersensitive and hyperreactive in function. And so to explain the extremes of behavior, the autistic-like rocking behaviors and depression, and then the explosive outbursts of behavior, you have to account for this in terms of neural mechanisms. And so I'd postulate that it was the cerebellar cortex that was hyper-excitable and functioning, and that this hyper-excitability was responsible for these extremes behaviors. And so I did asked Joe Berman, a neurosurgeon in New York, who was the grantee of the NISHD, National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, if he wanted to conduct some exploratory surgery on the cerebellum of these animals. We were able to get some of these isolation murdered adult animals from Harry Harlow, in which he could no longer use them because they were untestable. They were so pathologic and violent. And what we found was that the paleocerebellar decortication resulted in the virtual elimination of all the pathological behaviors. And these adult, previously very violent and aggressive animals, you could now hand feed them, pet them. The animals would engage in normal exploratory behavior. But this is not the case for the Neil Cerebell, which is later in development. So this provided very convincing data that the cerebellum is involved in a major way in the development of the pathological behaviors associated with separation. And this was the dominant theme in the film Rock Bye Baby, produced by Time Life Films, and it was premiered at the 1970 White House Conference on Children.
So what you're saying is that the vestibular balance motion sensory apparatus in the brain is closely tied in with emotional development. Is that correct?
Oh yes, very much so.
This is
you take a look at children. What what's the underlying play behavior? Kids love swings, slides, merry-go-rounds, and the activity of play, and this all involves rough and tumble play. Which is vestibular cerebellar stimulation.
And early, primitive human societies, as well as primates, typically carry babies on the mother carries the babies around wherever they go. The babies are constantly bouncing around on the mother's chest or back.
Right, and this is what led me to the first study of tribal cultures, the 49 tribal cultural study, in which I had inquired from about cultures that did carry infants on their back all day long versus those that did not, and asked what was the violence associated in these two different kinds of cultures. And I found that, and this was Texter's data, which is a cross-cultural summary, a statistical a summary analysis of interrelationships of all these various variables. And so I was able to find the two variables that were of primary interest, that is baby carrying and violence and aggression. And I was able to document that 77% of these cultures could be accurately predicted in terms of their violent or peaceful behaviors. And that was later increased to 80% when the errors in the original coding of these cultures, there were three cultures that were, everyone would say, miscoded or mislabeled. And so this was a very powerful documentation that 80% of peaceful or violent behavior could be accurately predicted from just one measure, and that is the degree of baby carrying throughout the first year of life.
This is incredible. This is just unbelievable.
Yes. And then, one has to really account for the exceptions, and so there were 10 cultures which did not fit the original predictive model. But when I examined how the cultures treated teen, adolescent sexuality, I could accurately predict with 100% accuracy the peaceful, violent nature of this culture. So, and then this was published first in the Futurist and then the Bulletin of Atomic Sciences in 1975. Basically, if you provide, if culture provides support to mothers, to be nurturing mothers, and to provide the support to baby carry, throughout the first year of life, and they adapt the value system, to permit expressive sexuality by teens, you're going to have a peaceful culture.
It's just that simple.
Yeah.
We're talking about the basic neuromechanics of child rearing and how it's reflected in the culture. This is just amazing.
Yes. And also the underlying neurobiology, so that sensory deprivation, which is really the lack of affectional bonding in the mother-infant relationship, leads to the development of the neural dissociative brain. And the presence of stimulation that's providing the somatosensory stimulation, the baby carrying, provides the basis for the development of the neurointegrator brain. And that then leads to the two classes of behaviors that we call peaceful or violent behaviors.
So presumably these baby carriers and strollers that people are using probably adversely impacts this stimulation, I would imagine.
Well, the baby strollers, I mean, it's best to carry the baby on the body of the mother. I mean, this is the experimental paradigm that was used by a very baby and child. And so it's a developmental process. And now let me say that by identifying baby carrying as the variable, we have to recognize that it takes a certain kind of culture to support mothers being nurturing mothers, that is to carry their babies on their back, or in my later studies looking at breastfeeding for 2.5 years or longer. It takes a certain kind of culture to support mothers in these behaviors. And so this, it's really a sort of a flagship variable that indicates a certain type of culture, the nurturing culture, has many aspects to it. For example, these nurturing cultures don't inflict pain on the infant. And this came through in some other studies with respect to breastfeeding. So that we really have to keep in mind that we're talking about a complex mosaic of behaviors that we call nurturing cultures, and versus conversely the opposite of non-nurturing cultures. And these are the cultures that lead to peaceful or violent cultures.
It's also important, I think, to point out, as with so many of the other issues we've talked about on this show, that there is abundant opportunity for looping structures to form in the social fabric of society. That, you know, a society that that is prone to allow mothers to nurture tends to produce human beings that are nurturing. And so the loop is complete. You either have a barbaric society, which is largely what we have in this country right now, or you have a supportive society that's concerned with the welfare of our children and people in general.
That's right.
Well,
with respect to the breastfeeding, show another linkage. Incidentally, the violence measure used in the original study was killing, torture, and mutilation of enemy captured in warfare. So the most violent measure in the human relations area files. But in the examining the role of breastfeeding, I was able to determine that in those cultures in which weaning age is 2.5 years or longer, and in these cultures, 77% of these cultures where weaning age is 2.5 years or greater have lower absence suicide. And then when you add the variable of whether use sexual expression is supported or punished, that's raised to 82%. So if we want to eliminate suicide in our culture, the best measures that we can take is support mothers breastfeeding for 2.5 years or longer and supporting positive use sexual affectional behaviors. And not the sexual exploitive behaviors, which in extreme includes rape, which is virtually non-existent in these high breastfeeding, high nurturing cultures.
So the answers are profoundly simple.
Yes, they actually are.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to take a break now to let people know that we're listening to KOPN 89.5 FM, and we're talking to Dr. James Prescott on Thought Crime Radio. We are the voices for the human rights of babies. And we need to make a few announcements here, and then we'll come back to you, Dr. Prescott.
Okay. We'll do.
The theme for this year's celebration of Black History Month is the history of black economic empowerment. The Columbia Public Library will host a talk by Robert E. Weems, Jr., professor of African history at MU and one of the nation's leading experts in the field of black business and economic history. The program will be held in the Friends Room of the Public Library on Tuesday, February 9th at 7 p.m. And also, the Holistic Living Fair has been postponed from January 23rd, which is past tense, to April 17th. The postponed event will take place at the Boone County Fairgrounds in the Multipurpose Building, April 17th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Further details will be announced later.
And right here locally, we know that breastfeeding provides benefits for both mother and baby. Boone Hospital in Columbia is offering a two-hour class in breastfeeding education support and guidance. The classes are open to everyone. You need not be a Boone Hospital patient. The next class meets 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Thursday, February 4th. More information that's ongoing is 815-6400 or visit www.boone.org if you'd like to find out the next meeting time. And Dr. Prescott, I'm listening to what you were talking about with the breastfeeding and the carrying and about Harry Harlow, and I wanted to tell you that I met Harry Harlow in 1974 when I was just 17, the year before I had my son, and I've come to know that that was a very profound meeting for me, because when I had my son in 1975, I fought the nurses to breastfeed him, and I carried him. I found a carrier that people made fun of, and I carried him on me, and what you say is very, very accurate, and I've often thought about how those things mediated the very disruptive breastfeeding and birth that we had. So if people just know that they can carry their baby, and not carry the baby in the carrier with their arms stretched out, but carry them on their body, is what you're saying is more important.
Yeah, it seems to me that both from the actual movement of the end of the arm, you know, hanging from a hand versus carrying on the chest or the back, plus the vertical versus horizontal position. These are profoundly different types of motions that a baby would be subjected to.
Well, the skin-to-skin, yeah. The baby being close to the mother's heart, the mother being able, you know, in this culture, there's a new movement of women who are actually doing the elimination from infancy. So, because also in those cultures where I'm sure you were, you saw they didn't wear diapers, the mothers weren't so in tune with the baby that they knew the movements of the baby, so that they knew when the baby needed to eliminate.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yes, I haven't studied that particular very well.
So in the last half of the hour, which we are in already, you wanted to talk to us more about how we can create peaceful societies, peaceful parenting. Could we continue with that?
Yeah, let me bring to the attention of your listeners the publication by Professor Sarah Blaffer Hurdy, it's HRDY, on Mother Nature, A History of Mothers, Infants, and Natural Selection, in which she looked at the maternal behavior of the primates in particular. And she had this to say, and let me just quote from her. She says, great ape mothers carry their infants wherever they go. Fathers, by comparison, are rarely in direct contact with babies. And it was the mother who continuously carried the infant in skin-to-skin contact, stomach-to-stomach, chest-to-breast, soothed by her heartbeat, nestled in the heat of her body, rocked by her movements. The infant's entire world was its mother. And then she goes on to say, no wild monkey or ape mother has ever been observed to deliberately harm her own baby.
Powerful.
So this raises the question, what has happened along the evolutionary trail in which the human mother has acquired these behaviors of violence toward her own offspring, since these behaviors are not known in the primate evolutionary record? And it's because cultures do not support mothers being nurturing mothers. And that's a major point that I would like to get across, And also, the findings that Franz de Waal and Franz Lanting and Bonobo, Forgotten Ape, had to say, you know, about why the bonobo, which we share 99% of our DNA with, is the most peaceful, nonviolent primate on the planet, whereas we, Homo sapiens, is the most pathologically violent primate on this planet, and yet we share 99% of our DNA. And let me quote from De Waal and Lanting. Had bonobos been known earlier, reconstruction of human evolution might have emphasized sexual relations, equality between males and females, and the origin of family instead of war, hunting, tool technology, and other masculine fortes. Bonobo society seems ruled by the make love, not war slogan of the 1950s, rather than the myth of a bloodthirsty killer ape that has dominated textbooks for at least three decades. So that sort of brings into context and focus, you know, how little genes have to do with the behaviors that we're talking about.
Yes, this is a wild goose chase, a very profitable wild goose chase that the pharmaceutical industry and psychiatry are engaged in here. I'd like to read something from this paper that's linked to from our website, the link on the right side that says Prescott on the developmental neurobiology of misery and bliss. That was my little title for it.
Where is it?
We posted that on our blog, which is www.thoughtcrimeradio.blogspot.com.
I was trying to tie it in with other things that that we've been dealing with on this show, and so I didn't use your title for this article. So I took some liberties here, but. In this article, it says, getting back to the issue of breastfeeding and suicide or depression, it says the suicide prevention effects from breastfeeding are explained by the sensory enrichment of high bonding in these high breastfeeding cultures with the high levels of the essential amino acid tryptophan. Tryptophan is a precursor amino acid that is converted into brain serotonin, deficits of which are known to mediate depression, impulse discontrol, drug abuse, and the violence of homicide and suicide. It can be expected that other essential amino acids are also deficient in infant formula milk that leads to other brain neurotransmitter system abnormalities. So, I mean, there are so many, behavioral, you know, tactile sensory deprivation, vestibular sensory deprivation, nutritional. Basically, it all comes down to the intuitive, compassionate understanding of what a baby needs. A baby needs its mother.
Exactly right.
And
that's what we need to focus on.
And you were saying that based on this research that we share 99% of our DNA with a line
with the bonobo chimpanzee,
and they are totally peaceful, and we are who we are right now. How do we stop doing what we're doing? How do we change that?
Well, that's the $64 question.
Money.
I've been at this for over 40 years and have made essentially no progress, despite the fact that Time Life produced this extraordinary film, Rockabye Baby, and which was premiered at the 1970 White House Conference on Children. And I have really not much to, to show for it.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Let me mention, it was at this year in 1970, the White House Conference on Children, in which Professor Yuri Bronfenbrenner, who is now deceased, who is the scientific chairman of the 1970 White House Conference on Children, and also chairman of the Form 15 on Children and Parents. This is what he wrote. America's families and their children are in trouble, trouble so deep and pervasive as to threaten the future of our nation. The source of the trouble is nothing less and a national neglect of children and those primarily engaged in their care, America's parents. The editorial committee objected to this statement on the grounds that it applied only to a minority of the nation's children and that therefore no note of urgency was justified. I strongly disagree. Page 252. So that was back in 1970.
40 years ago.
Yeah, and we're worse off today than we were in 1970.
We're far worse off. We have women who give babies and then go straight into the workforce when the babies are left in daycare.
And we're better off too, Dr. Prescott, because of your research and because of these other people and their research. Because if you go to the mall today, if you go to the grocery store, you are going to see many, many women carrying their babies. You're going to find women who are breastfeeding for years now. On Facebook, they're trying to take down pictures of breastfeeding women, and there's this huge movement brewing right now because the breastfeeding mothers are getting stronger and stronger in number, and it's because of your work. It may not look like it from your perspective, and I totally understand that and appreciate that, but your work has made a difference.
Your work is profound, absolutely earth-shattering.
Women are carrying their babies and they're breastfeeding, and they're wanting to go in. They're wanting to give birth in their homes and with people who will respect the mother-baby bond. And there's a movement against hospital birth, I think, primarily because of this. And I think we're gonna turn the tides. And I think your research out there for a couple of generations has really brought that to the forefront.
For the listener, the only reason this stuff is coming out now is because of the internet. Medicine has completely fallen down on this. They have completely neglected, they've suppressed this, actively suppressed this. So thank goodness for the internet. That's all I can say.
I'll agree with you there.
Yeah.
Let me also bring in another person who's also deceased. This is Ashley Montague.
Oh, yes.
he states in the Natural Superiority of Women, which was published in 1952, he says, women are the bearers and nurturers of life. Men have more often tended to be the curtailers, the destroyers of life. Women must be granted complete equality with the men, for only when this has been done will they fully be able to realize themselves. Women are the mothers of humanity. Do not let us ever forget that or underemphasize its importance. What mothers are to their children, so will man be to man. That was back in 1952.
Mm-hmm.
1952. So there's a long history of tradition and thoughts associated where I could not have accomplished without many of these other investigators have produced, and I'm sort of standing on their shoulders. But still, there's enormous resistance to the notion of breastfeeding. And I'll need to emphasize that breastfeeding 3 months, 6 months is not going to do it. You're going to have to... Culture is going to have to support mothers breastfeeding for at least 2 years of age and beyond. And this is what the World Health Organization and UNICEF recommended in 1992 in their, or 1990s, their Innocenti Declaration.
And what is the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendation?
It's 1 year. And they don't even cite the World Health Organization and UNICEF's Innocenti Declaration.
Well, part of the reason
they don't even recognize it.
We're doing this show because we want to point out these discrepancies where there are 40 years of research, years and years of research pointing out what humanity does need and how it's not being promoted by the medical system.
It's not only not being promoted, it's being subverted in our maternity wards where new mothers are being enticed with formula. Free packages and this is the crucial period when the breast milk starts flowing, and if the baby is not drinking breast milk, the breasts dry up, and so this is uh, This is, I'm sure it's very profitable for the formula company companies, but it really does a disservice to the people who put faith in our medical system.
Well, in April, we're going to have a few lactation consultants and experts on breast milk that will just tell us some unbelievable things, like how when a woman walks into a room, her body will sense what's going on in environmentally with toxins and will make milk to create the balance and the immune system for that baby. Things like that, we're going to get into that in April. So yeah,
the breasts really are a continuation of the umbilical cord for the baby.
So we want to continue to talk.
Well, yeah, and I think that's an important observation, because movement being carried on the body of the mother is really the primary system in which the baby knows it's still connected with mother once that umbilical cord has been cut.
Mm-hmm.
So the primary sensory input in fetal development is movement, not vision or audition, olfaction. You know, these are very understimulated sensory systems yet to develop. And the vestibular system, the sensory tracts, are the only ones that are fully myelinated at birth. So there are a number of reasons why we need to emphasize maximal physical body contact between mother and infant, and oppose any separation of the mother from the infant.
Beginning in the first seconds, I think.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes, right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So your research, I was just sitting here thinking, your research coincided with this big push to get formula and everything out there. So that your discovery about the baby and the cultures that were peaceful, I think, has been really significant, really supported a lot of the movement that we have had with people holding their babies. And I'm telling you, women right now, they are fighting, and they are strong, and they are fighting to breastfeed at work, and they are fighting to stay home and take care of their children and carry their children. I see a lot of positive going on. But when we go back to 1970, what happened with that time period when this research was coming out and you were presenting it? Do you...
What?
Go ahead.
To make a long story short, in the fall of 1974, we got a new director of the Institute of National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. And he had very little regard for the behavioral and biobehavioral sciences. And he emphasized mostly the pregnancy period, the intervening factors, and so forth. Anyway, my research on child abuse, neglect, and affectional bonding really didn't meet with his approval. So I was essentially wrongfully terminated from my 17-year federal career for misusing the official resources of my office in supporting research in child abuse, neglect, and developmental origins of violence, subject matter not within the mission of the agency. And that has stood ever since.
It sounds like you're quoting from an official press release. Is that really what they said?
That's what they actually said.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And that's the
So child abuse and neglect is not within the purview of the National Institutes of Health?
That's right. And,
unbelievable. Well, how can you create these big CPS systems? Oh, boy.
Yes, there's a great deal of money involved in all this.
I, you know, Rich and I, when we talk about this, we talk about your work a lot. We just get, like I told you earlier, I get viscerally, like, I respond to this, like, this is so wrong. It's just so wrong what has happened. Like, squelching your research and denying the needs of the baby and the environment and...
Yes, and before we forget, for those listeners who want to have access to these video documentaries and films, the Time Life film and a film produced in Canada on child abuse and neglect, and the governmental history of support and lack of support in this area. All of this is available on a DVD produced by Touch the Future and the Institute of Holistic Science, which is my operation. And they can go to www.ttfuture.org/violence and get a complete description of the DVD and how to order from Touch the Future. And
I recommend if people really want peace in our families and peace in our communities, get the DVD.
Let me just read from this more from this article that I linked from our website here. It says the transformation of a violent culture to a peaceful culture begins with the transformation of the individual who, as an infant or child, is placed in a life path of acceptance rather than rejection, of joy and happiness rather than depression, of love rather than hate, of peace rather than violence. This transformation of the individual requires the building of a new cultural brain, one that embodies and expresses naturally peace, love, and happiness.
That's right.
How sensible can you get?
It's so...
Yes, that's, of course, one of the major points of my emphasis, that all this behavioral complex and the social systems that support these various behaviors are rooted in biology of brain development. And that biology of brain development is determined by how we rear our infants and children and how much nurture and affection they're permitted to experience. And also the infliction of pain, which is the counterpart of this. I mean, pleasure really is the principal source of affectional bonding. And the more pleasure an infant and child experiences, the more neurointegrated brain is going to experience, the more pain and lack of pleasure it experiences, the more dissociative the brain is going to develop.
And this raises issues of morality, you know, as it's taught to our children. Here's another relevant. I hope you don't mind me quoting you. This article just blows me away. It says we also need to recognize the role of theological/religious systems that make an enemy of body pleasure as sinful and immoral, and which equates pain, suffering, and deprivation as being morally virtuous. These aberrant moral value systems oppose millions of years of evolutionary biology, i.e. pain equals avoidance, pleasure equals attraction, and which have equated the feminine with sin, wickedness, and immorality. These false moral religious values have turned our body against itself, male against female, parents against children, and children against parents.
And Rich is quoting James Prescott, who is actually on the air with us. That's great stuff, Dr. Prescott.
Well, thank you very much.
We're almost out of time, and
we'd like to get you back on, though.
Maybe
I would welcome that opportunity.
In March, we'd like to have you back on to continue talking about this. It's just such important information.
Right. Well, then we can get into the philosophical religious issues that support the kind of dehumanizing cultures that we have, you know, that make pain, suffering, deprivation a moral virtue, and pleasure a moral sin.
One of the things that we emphasize on this program is the looping structure of all these things, the intergenerational repetition of abuse from adults to children, and how
yes.
the children grow up to be adults who abuse children.
That is correct.
And on our website, you can catch podcasts of previous shows, but we're going to continue to have guests on who address all of these. In a few weeks, we're also going to have a fellow on who does trauma healing so that parents can prepare parents who have grown up several generations of having cried it out and been left in cribs and, you know, carried in a stroller or whatever, so they can heal their nervous system their brain so that they can bring in babies in the right way. So those are some of the things that we have coming up. But in the last few minutes that we have, Dr. Prescott, could you take us out with whatever you'd like to finish up, what you want people to know?
Well, you asked me to summarize 40 years of research.
I could do it. Leave the mother and the baby alone from the minute the baby comes out.
Well, that's a first step. That's a very important beginning, but we also have to deal with the issues of emergent sexuality of the child and the teen, and support teens' youthful expression of sexual affectional relationships. And we're just not sending them the right message when it comes to sex, and so they get all the wrong messages, you know. And it takes both efforts on the affectional bonding, the mother-infant-child relationship, and the sexual affectional bonding during adolescence and young adulthood. And then you've won your battle.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about, I think, next time you're on here, the religious and the sexuality issues that are facing our young people today and how that connects with what you were saying. And in the meantime, people can go to your website, which is www.violence.de, and they can read all about your research, find connections to the films, all of that, and read it for themselves. And maybe we'll even take callers when you're on next time if people want to ask you questions.
And just touching back on the sexuality issue, I understand the American Academy of Pediatrics is about to release new guidance regarding circumcision. So that should be an interesting opportunity for either giving up entirely on the medical profession or welcoming their belated awareness.
So yes, that's another area that I've been very active in, trying to get male circumcision abolished.
Yep, we're with you there. Our show has been talking about that as well. And so we're going to have to say goodbye to our guest, Dr. James Prescott. Touch the Future is the website, ttfuture.org or violence.de.org. We're going to have Dr. Prescott back in March. Thank you so much for all the work that you've done on behalf of women and children and society.
And our blog is thoughtcrimeradio.blogspot.com. Thank you, Dr.
And could you email me that blog?
Certainly.
I'm sure I have it, but...
Yes. Certainly.
That's great.
Thank you so much.
I look forward to... All right, okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
This is Janelle for Thought Crime Radio. We are the voices for the human rights of babies.
Subversive babies.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned for the Tech Guys coming up at 6.
Every day, in every way, it's getting better.